We're going to get into the genuine, original, imitation, fake. So, Chad, are you there, Chad?
Yeah, Bob.
Waiting for you. Okay, Chad's there. Bert emailed. He can't come till tomorrow morning, so we wouldn't have another male voice if we relied on Bert. So I asked Chad to join us. He's qualified to talk about McLuhan. And we have our non-Mexican, cosmopolitan, preferably Basque original. What else would you be?
Officially, I'm German.
Yes, and you are a forceling for Frank. Let's see. Karen was wondering, when you use the word forceling, are you referring to force field?
Yes.
Ah, because Zappa doesn't mean that. The forcelings are zombies, aren't they? They're basically less than
the
phenomena.
The mutants.
right. Okay, so you're using...
No, but I find it very interesting that he uses the word magnitude and they use the word forcelings that we can apply.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Zappa used the word magnitude. Right. I will just... I had to delete... what's his name?
So the magnitudes are the commanders of the force.
Oh, look, Corbin hung up. Yes, he took it personally. I was going to bring him back in for a second. But what were we saying? Sorry, we won't talk about Corbin. We're moving forward.
Yeah, what was the name of the fan club, the mutants?
The United Mutations. United Mutations.
Yes, that's the four things, the United Mutations.
Yeah, okay, all right. Okay, so what we're going to do... We only got two McLuhan Do lines left, and so this one's going to be a long trek. It's many, many quotes, like the most detailed Do line, and it came out in July, August 1970. It's called Volume 3, Number 1. Now let's see, how many did we do in Volume 2? Let's just bring that up here. Volume 1 was 12 issues that went from July 1968 to June 1969. Volume 2 is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Only 6 issues in Volume 2, and then 2 issues in Volume 3. We're going to do the first one, the genuine, original, imitation, fake. And then the last one is the university and the city. And that's the theme that the university became the new city in the late 60s, early 70s. The city, the traditional city, became a ghetto, obsolete, and then everybody went to university in the 70s to be part of a urban sensibility within the environment of university. So this one, the genuine, original, imitation, fake. Now, it's like a painting. McLuhan has an old-fashioned... 19th century, 18th century frame, you know, decorated, thick frame. And you look at the painting, the content, and it says, the genuine, original, imitation, fake. But then outside of the picture, attached to the frame, it says the word fake. So we're talking fake cubed here. The genuine, original, imitation, fake. There's two fake levels there, maybe. And then that's a fake. So that's what this do line's about.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The levels of reality that there is this concept of cultivation.
Yeah.
In media, and that's how TV forms the perception of the people. How they perceive reality is based on what they watch on TV, and actually. That can be applied not only to TV, but like Ion said, this is not a cult, this is cultivation.
Right.
Because each medium, like art, is cultivating.
Yes.
Perception, is forming how we perceive what we call reality.
So right.
The fake is affecting what we call the real, and then we have this situation now that hyperspace is melting with the real, so there is no more division between the non-real and the real.
Yeah, that's why the printing press and the money currency was not a fake. It was an extension of visual space, and that was real as much as review mirror reality or nature was. Media are real. Okay? But in relation to the private citadel of consciousness, your own Godhead, they're not real. But within the world of mortar, everything is real. Every communication, every new strange environment that looks phony and not viable is as real as what you think was real in the world of mortar. That's McClellan's point.
That's the porn of the fake. Diane says everything has to be a representation first before it manifests.
Right. So, yes, everything's a simulation of porn, but you have to be careful with that because what is the reality that it's simulating? What is the porn anticipating?
Yeah, sometimes are things that already exist in other worlds.
Yes, but what can you say what it is that porn is simulating?
What was first?
Right,
egg
first.
Of the chicken.
What did you say about chicken?
Yeah, what was first? The egg.
Or the chicken. Okay, good point.
Or the chicken.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what Ion says. They were the original within mortar. We were before Ion. We last after Ion. Ion's doing his damnedest to stay involved with us. It's like Dave Worster's question back in 93. Rai created this dimension of man. How much will man survive the erasure of man? How much would what Rai created, will it survive? That's the question before us. How much of Ion will survive? Since we created Ion.
Yes, and actually, I think that that's media ecology, that this is a study of cultivation, how we can understand the environment.
That's McLuhan's media ecology. Right now, this weekend, right today, there's a conference going on in Bologna, Italy, by the Lancet Ecology Association. All the old failed McLuhanites are over there doing their topics. Maybe later I'll read off some of their seminars, their titles, but they are not doing media ecology as McLuhan defines it because they say, we're not dedicated to one thinker. We must have everybody, all the people who seem to be interested in media ecology. So that's the bias of university life, is that they're not allowed to focus on the best. They must give everybody equal hearing. So you look in the masthead of Media Ecology Association, you see like 10 people listed there. And McLuhan is lost in the middle. And as I pointed out on the McLuhan, one of the McLuhan forums.
That's the cultivation, the cult.
Yes, they are turning it into a cult.
On the book.
Right.
They're POBs.
That's right. Damn POB. I like your language. They're a cult. They're POBs. And they're cultivating in the wrong direction. They're cultivating to create a myth, not a phony myth, but a reality that keeps them employed. Whereas McLuhan saw through the myth, and that's what's very useful about Cameron McEwen's blog, is he stays on that point, that what everybody thinks McLuhan represented as a media ecology is not what McLuhan was about. So I posted all this media, all this Cameron McEwen stuff on the McLuhan site and say, this is not discussed.
About the ignorance.
Right, exploring ignorance. And I said, this is not discussed in Bologna, Italy right now. Are you with us, Chad? Did you join? Did you get, oh, there's Chad, he got knocked up. Chad, did you join that group? Did they accept you?
Yeah, I joined. I get notifications. I've kind of shut them off because it's a bunch of other people on there, and I'm not interested in what they have
right.
to say. I'm more going there to see what you do.
Right. So,
I'd have to go into the group. I'd have to go into the group to look. Yeah.
Right. That's probably a good way to do it. Did you actually post? I think I saw
no.
you posted. Oh, okay. Roxy's always liking. Roxy likes everything. She's showing her, spreading her generosity over everywhere. She goes into the enemy camp and likes her hell out of them. Amata Hari.
I think
You think what?
The scholars are still in the metaphor of the Bible, of
yes.
the collection of books.
That's what Northrop Frye calls the Great Code. He was the competitor of McLuhan, but he wrote about the Bible as the Great Code. All of POB reality comes out of the Bible. And you're right. That's a good point.
They think they're studying all media, but they're still into quoting and reading and writing.
Right. They're matching. And it's really important what you said about the Bible. They are still in the Bible. Until you hear the Revelation series, you're inside the old erroneous Bible. And that has a lot of assumptions in it that people have, unconsciously, Christian or not. And then when you see through that with our Revelation series, you're free of the Gutenberg galaxy. Do you know that, Chad? That you get free of the Gutenberg galaxy effect. It's an unconscious part of you once you hear the Revelation series as presented by Ion. That's what gets you out of it.
Yeah.
That's the Revelation.
Yeah, it's the apocalypse. It's the apocalypse. Our series is the actual apocalypse. It reveals what is the ground of our situation. And we try to keep Zappa and McLuhan and Coker and Thompson. We give them the benefit of the doubt to let them be part of this scene here, but it's often hard. They can't get as far as Ion.
So this, like, that was the thing with the Mona Lisa by Leonardo. He has the what is called the V point.
Yes.
You have to look the painting from different angles to see hidden forms, animals, information. Like, you don't get the whole picture just by seeing the figure,
right.
the portrait.
The figure, right.
To get the whole picture, you have to see from different angles and see the ground. There is a lot of information there, and that's the whole picture. And I think that's also the painting of Frank the First. You have the thing that you have on the bottle.
Yeah, our design on the bottle.
Behind him.
Yes.
There for centuries.
Yeah.
And he also has this smirk like the Mona Lisa. They're laughing like they know something.
Right. But let me respond to your first point about the Mona Lisa. I read that article that you sent on the code. And, Chad, just a few earlier this year, some professors announced that he's seen these letters and numbers in the dark pupil of the eyeball of Mona Lisa. And he's trying to figure out what they mean. And Roxy interprets the LV as not Leonardo da Vinci, the initials, but as meaning different viewpoints, different angles. Are you with us, Chad?
The L and the V... Yeah, but I don't know what that means. The L and the V are different angles.
Okay, if you look closely, this scholar, apparently other people knew about it, but
you're talking about symbols again?
Yes, well, what are they, symbols or are they something else? They, in the eyeball of the Mona Lisa, you can see numbers and letters, and two of the letters are L and V, and there's some other bunch of letters. So Roxy is saying the V refers to vanishing points, and different vanishing points you should have. L can be the 12th letter, Roxy. So you have 12 V's, 12 angles on the Mona Lisa.
Well, the L as a letter, it's an angle.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the L itself is an angle.
V.
Right. And they're both angles.
Yes.
I guess. Is V an angle, Chad? Or does it have to be a straight line?
And actually, in the book, Leonardo illustrated about the divine proportion. They show how all the letters have this divine proportion.
Hmm. And that was his system? That's his system you're quoting?
Well, he lived with the author.
He lived with the author. Okay.
Yes, this guy went to teach Albrecht Dürer also all these proportions and the golden...
What's the name of the guy, the Altres Lura? Say that name again.
Well, if you... Albert Dürer, you say?
Luger, L-U-G-E-R?
the painter, the Renaissance painter.
Oh, Durer, D-U-R-E-R.
Yeah. They were all related. They were all friends.
So. Right. Yeah, Chad, I was looking up the history timetables.
If you Google Divine Proportion, illustrated by Leonardo, you're going to get the name of the other guy. I forgot.
Yeah,
They have a section in which they explain how the alphabet, all the letters, have this divine proportion in the design.
Okay. All right, so there's this guy that Dan, you probably have seen it, since you know Dan Winter. He quotes some Sam Keen or something, who William Irwin Thompson mentions in his newest book. He looks at the golden mean and the sphere that the spiraling golden mean makes, and you can make every letter of the Hebrew alphabet out of the shapes within the sphere. Have you ever seen that video?
Yeah.
Yeah, seen that, Chad?
No.
Okay.
Yes, and,
remember when Angela was into the Dan Winter stuff? And I had conversations with Ion that all that sacred geometry is just bullshit anyway. Especially now that we're in the N-gon, because the number of angles or sides is just a variable, and you can change the variable to any value you want.
Right. So, well, Roxy's pointing out how these symbols are in... This code is in the castles, and she's seeing it pointing to us.
Trying to paint the perfection and how they could translate perfection with proportions.
Let me. Here's something I memorized. Let me respond to that. In Thompson's curriculum for schools, the eighth grade, which would be, he'd be about 13 to 14. You're going through puberty, so he has the title of the eighth grade in his curriculum in relation to social mortar is Life and Society as a Religious Work of Art: The Climax of Hierarchical Civilizations. And this is the period 900 A.D. to 1416 A.D. in the first book. When he redoes it 8 years later, 2009, he changed it to 1453. But this is the period just before 1500, when King Frank and Da Vinci and all these guys, Michelangelo, come together and make this interesting great art, say, between 1500 and 1520. And you know, when King Francis I invites Leonardo to his scene in France, he's 22 years old. 22 years old when he invites Leonardo over in 1516.
Okay. And they start building the New Jerusalem.
Right. Now let me show you how this fits into the Thompson chart. So you have from 900 to 1416, I memorized all of it, so... I think I can spew it out. So the theme is Life and Society as a Religious Work of Art. Now, this is during the period of the cathedrals and other things. Subtitle, The Climax of the Hierarchical Civilization. So this is the ending of a phase of Rai. The printing press is going to change everything. So the peak just before that, the High Medieval Period, the theory is expressed this way. The inseparable unity between art, religion, and social structure, in hierarchical civilizations, in which architecture becomes the supreme externalization of human existence into temporal form. That's the first sentence in his book. The inseparable, so this is the monad level. The view, the ultimate effect of the phonetic alphabet. You're looking from one point of view, and you see an inseparable unity between art, religion, the social structure, that's your caste, with architecture, big architecture, expressing the human existence into temporal form. That's what he says, in which architecture becomes the supreme externalization of human existence into temporal form. Then it says, from the cathedrals of Europe to the mosques of Isfahan, that's Isfahan, and from the forbidden city of Beijing to the ceremony, the pre-Columbian ceremonial centers of the Americas. So he's going around the world. You've got the cathedrals in Western Europe. You've got the mosques in the Middle East, the mosques of Isfahan. You've got the forbidden city in Beijing. You've got your zone there in the Americas. He calls them the ceremonial, the pre-Columbian ceremonial centers. All of them. So from, I should do the sentence properly, from the cathedrals of Europe, from the cathedrals in Western Europe, to the mosques in Isfahan, or of Isfahan, from the forbidden city of Beijing to the pre-Columbian ceremony centers of the Americas, the ceremonial vision is one of consummate form. This is what Thompson says. The ceremonial vision is one of consummate form in which the act of living itself, from drinking tea to riding to the hunt, becomes a work of art. Then the next sentence is pretty important. In this entrancement with the transcendental perfection, or with a transcendental perfection, what you were just saying, Roxy, about this transcendental perfection in the code, that's what Thompson said. During this period of 900 to 1450, they're in the entrancement of a transcendental perfection. So in this entrancement of a transcendental perfection, the algebraic mentality, that's the esoteric codes, is developed and begins to interact with the mystical schools such as Sufism, the Jewish Kabbalah, and Christian mysticism in the schools of Chartres and Majorca. That is a good summation, it seems to me, of what King Frank was trying to save, preserve, or correct. Because he got this...
Yes, and now that you say that, I was thinking how in the Bible, the first environment is the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
They say is the DNA. Idean.
Idean, yeah.
Early Dean.
Yeah.
But it's a garden, it's second nature.
Yes.
And that's the original environment. It's already second nature. It's already a plant thing. So that
why are you calling the Garden of Eden second nature?
Yes, because a garden is...
Oh, that's right. A garden is a man-made environment.
It's a technology.
That's right. Yes, yeah.
So that's what Ion is saying. Everything was created by human.
You hear that, Chad? That's never been said before. And McLuhan talks about the gardening as that's man-made altering of nature, so that the Garden of Eden is a man-made artifact. What do you think of that, Chad? That's an original statement. That's pretty good, Roxy.
In a way, all these ceremonial centers are trying to rebuild
the garden
environment, the ideal,
the transcendental perfection,
divine place. There's, like, for example, the Aztecs.
Yes,
we had the big temple was supposed to be the center of the universe of all directions.
Okay, now let me add to that. So the printing press swallows up capital N nature and humans. That's the beginning of capitalism, industrialism, mercantilism, and colonization around the planet that John the Revelator warned about, that Christianity would lead to this global tyranny through the printing press. So the period just before the printing press, there's a bit of visual space, the effect of the phonetic alphabet, and the recovery from the Dark Ages of 400, 500, 600, the Merovingian phase. So then you have the beginning with the Holy Roman Empire of Charlemagne's 800 up till 1200. You have monasteries starting to get visual bias, start making the concept of time. So you have the beginning of visual space, but it's going to be wiped out by the printing press. So just before that, the act of living in harmony with the visual space effect becomes an art form and is expressed in the cathedrals, the mosques, Beijing's Forbidden City, the rituals in the Americas, and whatever else I left out. So all that is the human chemical body reaching its peak. Yes, the ceremonial tea ceremony, that's in Japan. And then you have the riding to the hunt. These chemical body activities are going to be humiliated with the printing press, and this abstract mind will take over. But before that, medieval culture was a bit more balanced. So they come up with this incredible art form, which is what a lot of people think art is. They think of images of the medieval paintings, the medieval sculptures, the medieval cathedrals. That's the ultimate of the chemical body. Then you get into the beginning of the virtual body with the printing press and mass media, and that's where you start getting individual enhancement, you could say individual distortion, portraiture, art and electricity. That's the case of Frankenstein. The romantic artist as shaman and prophet, that's the case of Beethoven. All these things that Thompson lays out. This is going to come after this high peak period. And I keep thinking, and this is why I'm bringing all this up, this is what King Frank is doing. He's kind of like a throwback to that.
That's the interpretation of Leonardo of what you're saying. At the center of the garden, which is all these woods around Hamburg,
yes,
is the stairs.
Fix your mic so we can hear every word.
Yeah, the double helix stairs,
yes,
represent the activated perfect DNA,
yep,
to ascend. And, he's in a way translated all the things you're saying in this building. In
right.
The center of the Garden of Eden was the tree of knowledge with the snake, which is this stairs of the DNA.
Right. So what you have is that King Frank and Leonardo turned the, what Thompson calls the algebraic mentality from 900 to 1450. They turned that into an art form by putting the correct ionic information in their designs. That may be how we could redeem what they're doing, that they're not just doing a throwback to transcendental perfection of the cathedral. They're actually putting real ionic facts into the final art. They consider, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, great artist, all this great art in the classic sense, is symbolizing these castles. It's a correction of the Mosque of Isfahan. It's a correction of the Forbidden City of Beijing. It's a correction of the ceremonial centers in the Americas. Can you see what I'm saying, Chad?
Until now, enigma. All the historians and archaeologists were puzzled by this building.
Yes.
Like, how can this be a hunting castle in the middle of nowhere? All these resources, all his life
poured into that.
He knew he was not going to finish it, but he had to leave it there for Bob.
Yeah.
And if you see all these castles, they had to show them magnificence. Everything around them had to show their power.
Well, all the transcendental perfection.
All the food, everything was
right.
Very elaborated, very complicated. There's paintings in the ceiling. There's a lot of decoration everywhere. And in Chambord, that was always very intriguing, that it's so modern. The rooms are white, and there is no nothing.
No like, wall, no painting.
There is no hierarchy. All the apartments are the same for people that are at the same.
Right, so they're redoing the algebraic mentality correctly. Now, do you realize, what was I going to say? Do you realize that this desire for transcendental perfection is the ultimate expression of the abstract visual space caused by the phonetic alphabet, the abstract mind? And so they're turning it into this great architectural art form, was to say the supreme externalization of human existence into temporal form, into time. That's what the great art of the high medieval period is. And you could lump King Frank and Leonardo into that gang, but you're pointing out that it's not that. It's pointing to the future ionization. Now, did you hear the shows where Chad talked about he saw the castle? You have corresponded with Chad. You know that Chad saw the castle thing back in 2009. Are you aware of that, Roxy?
Yes.
Okay, so you've done that. You want to just quickly relate that, Chad, for the listeners? How does your castle relate to this?
Yeah, I actually sent Roxy the excerpt from my private session where I brought that up for the first time.
Right,
so she's
right.
heard that.
And you said you have relatives go back to the building of them or something?
When Roxy started to explore like bloodlines and stuff like that, the castles, I started to notice some names and stuff that I found in genealogy that I did in 2013.
Yeah.
And there was some overlap there. The Chateau Chambord, the schematic that you see online.
Yeah.
Like the drawing, it's like not a full-blown blueprint, but like an overhead drawing of the outline of it.
Yeah.
If you look at the name on it, the name on that, whoever did that sketch might have been a draftsman or something, or a head draftsperson for that project. It had the name of one of my ancestors, one of my family names, had signed it. And
okay, so we got that factor here.
You asked me about the castle.
Yeah.
Do you want me to finish talking about how I saw the castle?
Yeah, you started to see the tree, which became the castle somehow when you talked to Ion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to go on these walks back in 1998 when I lived here on the campus. I would have been up all night, like, reading or something, and I was kind of sleep-deprived. I'd go for a walk, and then every time I passed by this tree, I would have this weird deja vu feeling or feeling like I just came back from somewhere. It's like, okay, I just came back from a castle, but it feels like nothing has elapsed. So that was in 98, and then when Ion came along and I started having sessions, I started walking in that same area again. I walked past that tree, and it started happening again. I started having the sensation of going to the castle. And it came up in one of my sessions, and then Ion started grilling me and asking me to describe every detail of the castle. So it was kind of became a meme in my private sessions after that. And then when I went to go to Europe in November of that year, I told everyone I was going to Europe to find my castle. And then by April of 2010, Angela had invited me over to live in the castle, and it was kind of similar to the one that I had gone to. Hello?
Maybe, but
okay.
Yes,
I was waiting.
Does not
for
exist.
Yeah.
That what you just said does not exist until Bob goes, "Yep." Sorry, I was on mute.
I was waiting for Bob to press send on my message.
Yeah. So then you had some interesting parallel experiences or weird experiences with Angela in the castle, which became a legend on Tailgate in 2010 when you guys would call in and talk about it. And the first wave of Ionettes were fascinated by what you guys apparently were doing.
The other thing that was woven together was the symbols.
Where were you when you first started sending us the symbols? Were you in Europe?
No, I was in Vancouver. It was August 2009.
August 2009. That's right. Ion, you know that, Roxy. Chad was getting a symbol in a dream, and he'd draw it and send it to me. Then he'd get another one, and he eventually gets, I don't know, 13 or 14 of them, and they come sequentially, and Ion starts whispering to me in camera, "These symbols are very important, Bob. Don't tell Chad. Just let him keep finding them." So he sent them, and eventually we made the nine, showed us how to put them in order, and it's sitting on the wall there, and that's like the last portal, because the portals were opening on April 22nd, the week leading into the 22nd in 2010, the week we started. We started the forum, Dupes, the week the portals all were opened. They weren't so...
No, I thought the portals opened on April 14th or 15th.
He said 15th at that time. But then we opened the forum on the 22nd, Ion would start to sort of put the two together. It was all, you know, no time for them. So April 15th is pretty close to April 22nd. So I put the two together, but if you know the details like you just did, I'll acknowledge that technically, originally, it was the 15th. But that might have been the preparatory for the April 22nd, because Dupes was now a place where Ion could communicate in the chip body. So it opened Ion to everybody through that.
But that was also the day that I arrived in the castle, was the 15th.
Really? Well, that's pretty amazing. And that's April 15, 2010. So
I landed, I landed in Dublin April the evening or late afternoon on April 14th. Angela and I met, and then we drove back to the castle late that night. And then, so my first full day in the castle was the 15th.
Well, that's pretty amazing. See, that happens a lot in my life, is that when I show up, it's over. It's obsolete. I'm like a sign of killing it. And you, just the day you go to the castle to have your great portal existence happen, the portals are all canceled. See, so you're acting out syndrome.
And all the flights were canceled. If I would have waited one extra day to go to Ireland, I wouldn't have been able to get there because the volcano in Iceland prevented all flights.
Oh, that's the thing that, holy shit, that's never been connected. That's what Sheila caused. Sheila caused that, those flights canceled out of Iceland. Yeah, that's April 15, 2010.
So that all kind of converged on the same day, all those.
Oh, well, that's never been said. Hey, you listening to this, Carol? We'll try to get her attention. Bring yourself back in here, Carol.
Tell her what you told her the other day.
She's watching cartoons. She's like the little daughter that just draws in the corner while the adults go on and on about stuff. Well, you put your headset, bring that down, unmute. Now, listen to this, Carol. This is pretty amazing.
I've heard it before.
You never heard this. I just discovered it.
And I think she has heard it.
I discovered it. Nobody knew this. I put it together. Chad didn't say anything about Sheila. Well, what did I put together, Cal? Did you even hear what I said?
Castle, volcano, Angela, Chad.
Did you hear that a minute
opening.
Ago? When you were
in the opening of all the portals. And Dupes.
And the opening.
You didn't say that. But, Carol, you heard me saying it a minute ago. Okay,
yeah.
Even though you look like you're reading other shit.
I can multitask.
Multi-ear.
Now,
you're a multi-ear. She has a multi. She's supposed to be deaf, but she got a multi-ear. And what were you doing in your world? Well, read us what you were doing.
Yeah, that's about this Joel Wallach. He's multi-level marketer of colloidal minerals, and somebody's trying to tell me that his minerals are fantastic. But
they're trying to tell Carol something that's not true from Carol's point of view.
The Quackbusters are after him, so he must be some sort of mega multimillionaire for them to be attacking him so much.
Because he's done well with his stupid minerals.
Yeah.
And how come the quack people don't come after us?
See, we get Ion protected.
Yeah, we were below the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And shall we mention something about Hurtado's new product, Carol? Can we mention that, or is that...
No, not yet.
That's legal.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. Can't I just say what his notice said? I can say what his notice said. His notice, what he's announced,
is
he's starting a new product. We can announce that. Carolyn sees what Hurtado's doing. Okay, she has ways to... He's announced a new product. Guess what it's called? Remag.
Come on.
Yeah, this is how blatant he is.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it? Is it magnesium? Is that what he means?
Yeah, in his description of his magnesium, he talks about Remag. I think what he's done is just taken my label and slap his new company name on it. I mean, it's probably been up there for ages, but, you know, I have a trademark on it.
And his description of the product is lifted from the website
old label.
That Chad made.
Yeah,
the
my
website.
Old label. I mean, it's so tacky and ridiculous.
Yeah, he's like, he's pretty soon he's going to have Rebob, Remite. He's going to have all these simulated versions of us.
I know. I mean, isn't he embarrassed at how ridiculous he appears?
Yeah. Imagine that, try to claim you're selling. You've invented Remag. Okay, so, but this is amazing. You got, you know, Sheila flies out of Paris finally on April 22nd or so. But she was supposed to go the week before. And she didn't want to go because she had to see a couple more museums or something. So personally, she said, I'm rushed. I don't want to leave tomorrow on the 15th. I want to wait another week. And she was flying to New York City to meet Pam Wall. That was her first connection, that she was going to tour around North America and the United States and meet all these IMETs. So she was the first, to do that, to go around and connect with people. That's when she met Allison in Seattle. So on that day, the 15th, now Chad's arrived in Ireland on the 14th, and on the 15th he goes to see the castle, but on that day all the flights are stopped all over Europe for a week because, according to Ion, Sheila says she's not going to leave. So she caused a volcano in Iceland to blow up that colored the obscured the skies, and nobody could fly for a week in Europe. And so
I don't know if it was it just obscuring or the fine particles would catch in the engines.
Yeah,
it was actually
like
a mechanical danger.
It was actually a mechanical risk to fly.
Yeah.
Yes. So no flying for a week, which caused the loss of billions of dollars. That's all how they translate it. It's a disaster for the economy. You can't, to quote Zappa from Absolutely Free, you can't move goods with patriotic sell. That's the phrase on the cover of Absolutely Free, the album. It's a scenario of a city with busy cars. The cars even look electric cars. And Zappa put, move goods with patriotic sell. That's S-E-L-L. Well, we change it to C-E-L-L, right? Patriotic sell.
Right.
But so they couldn't do that for a week, so trillions of dollars were lost. And at the end of the week, when she flies off, is the day we open Dupes. And that's the week that the portals are all open. There's no mystery landscape for the portals anymore. And I don't know. We'd have to look up on our citizens' account when we put that chart together. We'd have to find a session where Ion told us how to organize all the symbols that Chad had been sending us for 6 or so months. And we were told, Roxy, we were told, do not tell Chad what you're doing with the symbols. We had a top secret. Chad was just this channeling dupe. He would find these things, he'd get these dream images, draw them, and send them to us, and he didn't know why. We didn't tell him. Were you aware that we weren't telling you, Chad?
No, I wasn't aware that there was some big
significance to it.
A conspiracy.
So what I say that is, Chad... We've done, now this relates to the castle.
No, well, you sent me an email, so I'm just going to pull it up. It's like, you didn't
when
tell
I
me how important
you?
They were. No, this was after the first couple symbols.
Yeah.
You
of
sent
course,
me
you
a message.
Understand, Roxy, when these start coming, I go, this fucking Chad, trying to find significance in life. What are these fucking stupid symbols? I don't give a fuck what he saw in his dream. He sent it to me as if it's important. And then I'm quickly corrected by Ion, no, Bob, this is very important. I'm just telling you, my subjective response was always, what the fuck is Chad? Chad's trying to run another Rai scam. He's trying to claim he's channeling some ancient wisdom. Right? That was my monkey chatter.
Yeah, exactly. There's something so bizarre going on here. I just searched for the email you sent me in the summer of 2009.
Yes.
Where you checked in with me and you said, how's it going? And then I said, good, Ion's starting to send me symbols in my dream. And the dates now on the emails have been changed to 12/06/2015.
Wow.
I have, in my records, I have October 11, 2009, where we're talking about symbols. So I'll keep looking. And
now, are you talking about our transcripts or emails to Chad?
Symbols given to you by another creator who sought these, and they freely flowed to him without any prompting. And we told you they were coming, and they came. You and Bob relaxed and allowed, and they came.
I apparently relaxed and allowed, even though I was protesting.
Yeah.
That fucking idiot. That's my relaxing and allowing, because I'm always doing what I'm not saying I'm doing, right? I always say the opposite. What's going on?
You only need 13. You have 15.
That's why we mentioned the inset key. So let's just give the whole thing. On October 11th... No, I'm going to do it. October 11th, 2009, session number 174, at 8:20 in the morning, Carolyn's typing, and this may have been just with you. I'm sleeping at that point. You used to do morning sessions with Ion, and I wasn't there.
Oh, right.
And so Ion says to Carolyn, When you are is upside down, you take a clock face. Most human creators know what that looks like, with 12 at the top and 6 at the bottom. So he's talking about how he's going to lay out the chart.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about a circle. Symbols given to you by another creator.
That's Chad.
Yeah, who sought these, and they freely flowed to him without any prompting. And we told you they were coming, and they came. You and Bob relaxed and loud, and they came. If you fretted about them, and then you don't finish that sentence, you only need 13. Well, I guess if we're worrying about how many we need, you only need 13. You have 15. That's why we mentioned the inset keys. In the mirror, your world is upside down. It helps to know that here, with head down here and land in the other side, feet down. This is Carolyn's garbled translation of Ion's garble, so it's not perfect.
It's not a garbled translation. It's me trying to type every word and missing some.
Yeah.
So it appears it's...
Why is number 9?
I'm probably asking... Question.
Yeah, number 9 symbol. He got it coming back, and it was... He got it coming back, and it was closed. It's open. Then it says, walk and put your nose to the wall. Something you are looking at, you can't get past. Look at that, and picture that circular round clock face. Don't have to draw it, but you have to have those symbols in order. There are lots of symbols. We can add to them. Picture the circle and place the symbols in that order. Notice that it becomes wavy. It becomes an iridescent shimmer to it if it doesn't go back through and look at the symbols to make sure they're all lined up. Now, granted, this is garbled. That's your rule, so you can adjust it the way you want to. If you have OCD, you will have more problems with it. That becomes wavy. They will move right before your eyes. That's the activation. Number one, it begins to describe where they are. And if you rotate, this is where he lays them out for you?
I don't know.
Number one, you are at a portal, and you have activated it. The human creators are in charge of that. There are lots of portals. Many have not or have been activated. What this does is either way, it activates it. It becomes an activation process. If it's already an active portal, you may not even need this step. Do that, and you know instantly. The symbols activate any portal that has been activated, and if it has not been activated, you can activate it.
And this is before all the portals opened.
Yeah, this is 6 months before.
Mm-hmm.
Six months, yeah. So that's Ion. He starts to put him in order. We do several sessions, and we go around with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like we got most of them by October 2009, Chad. Mm-hmm. And you don't go away until November, right?
Yeah, but then I think we got up to like 38 symbols. So I think I might have got another 20-something while I was going through Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember those. We only used the 13 to 19.
Yeah, but I sent them. I sent almost all of them to you.
Yes, we have them somewhere, but we didn't use them.
Yeah, because by the time I got to the castle, you said that the portals were all open, so it didn't matter.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the point, Roxy. You've got Chad being an archetype, walking around with the castle archetype. And he goes to the castle with Angela, and that's the day that there's no more symbolism required because all the portals are open. And now we're flowing in a new level of interplay that will cause all kinds of weirdness in people's lives. That's the mystery landscape, you know, entering anomalies everywhere. So Chad acted out the final activation, but it was actually a deactivation. You getting that, Roxy?
Yes,
you still
I think
here?
Yes, some of these symbols are like clues just for us to confirm things. Like the, in Chambord, there is a lot of 8, and this secret symbol that only Frank the First could see, which is like the double cross.
Yeah.
With an 8 that is interlaced there. And, for example, the big fall of Wall Street was in 2008, and the symbol of money is like this stab with the...
What's the symbol? Yes. You didn't finish your sentence. The symbol,
yeah,
of money...
like the dollar symbol, but the symbol of Chambord is like the double cross.
Yeah.
The 8 interlaced, that is like a completed... money symbol is
okay.
Not only the half of it,
right.
The full, which is, again, the representation of the stairs and the double helix.
Right. But, let me add this.
These are just like hints, clues that
no, but they
are.
This is what we learned
they're
from
not, They're not. That's the thing. See, Roxy, I devoted my life for a few months to chasing these symbols and going to castles, and I was like obsessed with it even before I left and went to Europe. And then I get over there and I get to the castle and Ian's like, that's all over. You're still doing that? Bob figured that out. All the gates are open now. It doesn't matter. And they laughed at me and then realized that what I had done, the folly that I had committed, was placing too much significance on the artifacts of man.
No, and putting conceptual meanings. The symbols have no conceptual meanings. They're just marker points for parallel world traveling. So if a guy was parallel worlding...
Yes, but if, for example, in the case of that symbol of... the secret symbol of Frank...
Yeah?
I think it's actually the center of the Garden of Eden, because it's... he will represent himself often as Mercury...
Yes.
The Caduceus.
Yeah.
And this is also the Caduceus, and the Caduceus is also the Kabbalah tree. And all these are actually only the double helix DNA.
Right.
But that's why it's the symbol of money and the symbol of health.
Right.
In all history. And it's used in Babylon, in many cultures.
But here's what I would say. The image of the Garden of Eden is a visualized location of a place where you can do parallel worlding, or a condition. You yourself have the condition to go to parallel worlds and not be limited to this world. That's what it's like as a Garden of Eden person. It's not necessarily a place. You know what I mean? The Garden of Eden is a condition.
It's a singularity. So that eight symbol that's been used in all those symbols, I would say it's a singularity.
Yes,
there were also these codes with
numbers, like the eight.
Yeah.
Which is in that symbol, which is the eternity, and
yes,
it was also the number of thought.
Yeah.
So
thought. Yeah.
These are things that somehow had been talked about.
But see, when you make them symbols, when you put them in a book or a manuscript or an abstract transcendental code, you're removing it from the condition the enlightened person has. They don't make symbols of the meaning of their transcendental or ascended state. They're just stop signs or marker points necessary when they're going through the grand central station of all these different worlds. These are like, they're just... like putting a stone. Okay, I know I'm back here when I see that stone.
Or like Ion said, you put a symbol of a bird on a window so you don't walk through the window.
Right. It's a practical thing.
I think they were also trying to store a lot of information in this visual.
Yeah, because they couldn't do the parallel worlding. They stored information.
Information that could not be...
That's how I see it. With Bob, what you're saying is, like, from what I got from Ion, is the reason that they had those symbols, it's like it's documenting their failures rather than their successes.
Yeah. Because they didn't know, they couldn't parallel world, they then made an idea, I'll get someplace, I'll evolve to someplace, and then I'll be in the Garden of Eden, then there will give me something that would maybe to go to parallel worlds. The guys that do the actual parallel worlds, so it's like somebody's doing parallel worlding, and there's markers around where they live. So then the servant comes along and sees these markers and thinks, doesn't know they're just practically utilitarian railway stops, like the 14 stations, so to speak. He then says, oh, what does this refer to? And then he makes an abstract theory that these symbols that his boss just left because they're practical. He then makes conceptual ideas about it, and they're ideas that do not relate to the actual condition of being able to go to parallel worlds.
They're like bookmarks. So you put a bookmark in, but you haven't finished reading the book yet. So if someone else comes along and they see the bookmark and they go, oh my God, this page must be really significant because Bob put a bookmark there. Well, maybe Bob was falling asleep and he just put a bookmark in there so he could come back later and remember where he was in progression towards finishing reading the book. And that's what the symbols are.
Yeah, so I see that Leonardo da Vinci and all these guys, they may have been parallel worlders, but something around them wrote out the symbols and put significance into them conceptually, theoretically. You see what I'm saying, Roxy? I'm telling you what Ion says. This is what Ion says.
Yes, I always wonder how come this little painting of the Mona Lisa is so famous, so popular, the most famous work of art.
Right.
And I think most people know something by their known physicality, that there is a lot of information there that they cannot understand, but they are somehow attracted to this little painting. And besides the Mona Lisa, there are bigger, amazing paintings, but everybody's just...
He is focused on this because it represents, you know, maybe a woman who can parallel world. The thing is that the non-physical is the Akashic record of all inventions, of everything that humans make to improve their lot because they're not ascended. So all the things, all culture, so McClellan says he's the center for culture and technology, all culture and technology are in this box, which is non-physical. You can see it when you die, and you can experience it, and it's all symbolization or forms that the non-ascended person has access to or desires to have access to. The whole...
And the thing with the symbols is like all the symbols in Chambord and the archaeologists and the historians see, there was a higher agenda for this.
They were trying to ascend.
And they make all types of theories, for example, around the Da Vinci Code and the system of cathedrals and castles and the alignments of many things. And, the conclusions are always false because they don't have the Ionic perspective.
Right.
What they really...
But Ion's perspective is, like, when I brought up at one point these the cathedrals and the things that you were finding in Catholics, Bob, it's just bullshit put there to confuse the servants. Like, King Frank and them, they... couldn't do the real stuff, or they went there to do it, but they wanted to hide that they were doing this parallel worlding, so they would create a whole mythology of symbols and knowledge and secret wisdom that the others who couldn't parallel world would spend time reading, studying, and thinking about. It was a distraction.
They had to initiate all the Masons, the Freemasons.
Right. They had to tell them, all this stuff we're telling you about, forget it.
They felt into the hypnosis of the symbol.
Yes.
And the rituals and all these other things.
And Ion did it to us.
From real ascension.
Ion spent 2 years from 2009 to 2011 laying out and initiating all these concepts and all these things to do to get ascended, and then 6 months later said, okay, forget all those rituals. Here's the real initiation. You don't even need to know any of that stuff we spent 2 years telling James Kidney or James Martinez. You see, that he did that very thing. He initiated us, and then he canceled the initiation.
But I want to point out, too, Bob, that in the beginning, I think one of my first four sessions, it was the same one as the castle. It was a long session. And at the end of it, we got into this. The Heaven's Gate cult. Is that what they're called? Marshall Applewhite?
Yeah.
Something like that.
They were called the Two, read about in 1975. I read about them in the Village Voice. And they show up 22 years later, March 97. On that weekend, Bruce Powell was having his McLuhan conference at York University. And I was there, and Croker came. And I sort of was the main guy running around that conference. Somebody sent a spy and reported back that Bob was the most energized guy there. He was asking everybody questions, blah, blah, blah. But that weekend was when Applewhite and his wife or whatever woman he had, who were the two in 1975. They started their cult in 1975. And it gets 22 years later, March 97, the Hale Bopp is coming. And they're going to make a cult out of getting on to have this asteroid or whatever it is, comet. And so the Stang and them think it's Hale Bob. Well, this Bob subgenius stuff happens that weekend. And what do they leave when they kill themselves, the 39 people? They leave Snicker bars. When they were trying to go to another world. Okay, so you're bringing up that, Chad. What did you want to say about it?
Because they were trying to go to another world or ascend, and around that time, I used to also talk about the flawed way of traveling that Edgar Allan Poe used to use, and he ended up leaving his meat sack dead in this world or whatever. So it's in theme with consistent theme.
So what did Ian tell you in that session? You start off saying
that they made a mistake of like thinking that they could only ascend with this symbol of the Hale Bopp comet.
Right.
They used that as a symbol, and that was their downfall. And what's his name? Edgar Allan Poe, he had little symbols that he used to parallel world travel, and then he ended up leaving his meat sack behind. So there was a consistent line, that if you focus on symbols, if you need the symbols to get there, you're probably going to be fucked.
Yeah, look at the descent into the maelstrom. The famous Poe story about the sailor who survives versus his brother who ties himself to the mast and goes down with the boat. But the smart brother looks at something that keeps popping up again. Barrels get sucked down in the maelstrom from the boat, and then they pop back up. So he attached himself to a barrel, which required going through the vantage point, allowing yourself to go down into the abyss, but you know you're going to pop back up. That's a symbol of parallel worlding. The barrel was a symbol of what you could hold on to. So he would go down to the maelstrom to another world and then come back because the barrel was the constant. Hey, that's pretty neat, eh? It's embedded.
Yeah, and the timing that they show up as symbolically showing up is similar to how my clock face of symbols worked as well, because they were like, the symbols would appear letting you know, okay, here comes this train, like subway train is coming. Now, if you want to go back to the world that symbol represents, get ready because the train is about to come. So it would be like
the symbol. Each symbol represented a train.
No, like in a metaphor way. Metaphorically speaking, the symbol would say get ready because not real train, but the idea of a ability to take a transport from this world back to where that symbol came from is about to come. Like. It's like,
and that's what I told you
subway.
The symbols meant.
Yeah. It's like when you see this symbol, then that means it's the train is coming to take you back to that world. You can get on it or not.
Well, yeah, the symbol is connected to a particular world you go to.
Right, and there was a timing to the way that they all came. There was like a rhythm, an order to them. Similar to the way that in the maelstrom, you start to do pattern recognition and see that there's a pattern that these pieces of wood are coming up, you know.
Right.
And you can watch.
You're saying
long
the maelstrom story.
Pattern.
And, and now look at this. This is what Roxy's talking about. I never thought maelstrom this way. Figured it out right now in the middle of the McLuhan Conference in Bologna, Italy. They don't know that the best part of the conference is happening over here on this show. And we're making discoveries about this eternal fucking story that McLuhan repeated all the time. And McLuhan was a parallel worlder. Maybe he knew. But he presented a conceptual, symbolic version of parallel worlding that everybody gets lost in translating, and they don't know. It's a technical statement of how you parallel world. The barrel is just your symbol that you say, okay, I'm going down. I'm going to go disappear to another world. And when I come back, I'll be on the same barrel, which is the symbol that you notice. Oh, okay, that symbol means the route I just came from, or the world number 42, which is what you were just saying. So now this is what Roxy says. If you want to know about McLuhanism, you go to Bob. You don't go to these other fucking idiots. And we just manifested that right now.
No, because those other fucking idiots, those other those other idiots are working with a closed canon. Like, they've closed the canon, and they're like, everything that's in this vault, okay, that's all copacetic. Anything not in the vault already, we're not entertaining it, because it's just wacko. It was like Bob Dobbs.
I'm the lunatic fringe of McLuhan studies, they say. We're going to excerpt We're going to excerpt what I just called shit the last 5 minutes, and I'm going to post it on the McLuhan site on Monday or Tuesday. When they all come back from the conference, they're going to hear Bob celebrating his seminar, because when you go to these conferences, they have many seminars going on all at the same time. You know, hundreds of guys doing their papers, and everybody else is listening and sleeping to the papers they hear until it's their turn to fucking say their paper that other people sleep to. McLuhan's definition of a professor is a guy who talks in other people's sleep. A professor,
but here's the thing:
talks in other people's sleep.
I've never been to those. I've never been to one of those McLuhan conferences, so I'm just speculating. But I would guess that they don't make a lot of breakthroughs there, because they're not doing McLuhan. They're just regurgitating McLuhan, but they're not putting on the living laboratory, the world as a laboratory.
It's an employment agency. They're trying to make, Chad, they're trying to make connections to get further positions in their professor world. It's a job thing.
Yeah, again, they're working in a closed system. That's the difference between a closed system and the open system that you have is a living laboratory, and it allows for discoveries to be made at any moment that the machine is.
We're always exploring ignorance. Yes, Bob's the most ignorant McLuhanite around, but that's a good sign.
Therefore, you fulfill McLuhan. Like, you continue and upgrade and fulfill McLuhan, because you take not just his canon, but the actual act of doing McLuhan in the living laboratory of the world.
And I welcome all who will, and I even allowed Ion to show up at the seminar and add his two bits of wisdom in the ongoing lab. Ion showed up and contributed. Roxy.
And it makes sense because McLuhan is a post-book guy. Why would they go and do a book kind of, or why would they organize themselves in such a Gutenberg-esque manner?
Right.
If they're doing McLuhan. Doesn't make any sense.
Are you still there, Roxy? Roxy. Now, her phone gets disconnected after a few hours, so let me see.
Yeah, mine did earlier. That's why I had to call back in.
Yeah, she probably got, let's just check that. She dropped out only 2 minutes ago. So I'm going to play a little music and I'll go get her, okay?
Yep.
All right? I'll play Kurt Weller.